She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And remember, we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Our show today was made possible due to the generous support of Goodwill Industries of Southern Arizona. They supply services, training, and jobs to people with barriers to employment. And we thank them for their support and for all of the many things they do for our community and for the planet. Thank you, Goodwill Industries of America and of Southern Arizona. The name of our show today is Drowning in Plastic, and people that have been part of Mrs. Green's World for any amount of time know it is my most passionate subject. It's the one I like to talk about the most. Our guest is Deanna Cohen. She is the CEO and co-founder of Plastic Pollution Coalition. I might be ringing the bell a lot, Deanna. Just get ready.
Ready.
I know. The Plastic Pollution Coalition is a global alliance of individuals, organizations, businesses, and policymakers working toward a world free of plastic pollution. That is my fantasy, and its toxic impacts on humans, animals, and the environment. Deanna was inspired to co-found the group by her work as an artist because her chosen material is the ubiquitous plastic bag. She makes pretty things out of ugly plastic, I have to say it. With the Plastic Pollution Coalition, she helps to raise awareness of ocean waste, the majority of which, as we all know, is non-degradable plastic, and to provide everyday strategies to cut down on the amount of plastic we use and throw away. So welcome, Deanna. I could not be happier. It's like, this is my passionate subject. It's killing us. So let's start with the easy question of, yes, it was. You were involved in art, you're an artist, but how did you get involved on such a grand scale with your artistic background and your journey to becoming the Plastic Pollution Coalition goddess or queen?
Warrior.
Warrior, yes, let's use warrior, I like that.
Well, I've been making art most of my life, and as a student at UCLA about 30 years ago, I initially was a biology major, and at some point I found a frustration in the fact that in the science department at that time in the 80s, it was not possible to be as creative as I felt I would like to be, and I was impatient. And so at some point I began taking classes in the art department and tried to double major unsuccessfully, and at that point made the choice to pursue art for my education, and in doing that found that I was suddenly surrounded by a bunch of people who were all thinking in a very creative way and looking at a lot of things that were going on in the sciences as well. And I think, you know, lucky me that I chose this route, because life has taken me on a path where I've come around full circle to needing to be able to understand scientific reports and peer-reviewed studies and basically understand science. And it really was through my artwork. And I've been working with plastic bags for about 25 years, cutting them up and sewing them back together. When I originally started working with them, it was not from an activist perspective at all. It was really a celebration of the colors and the fonts and the text and the images which were printed on the bags, and a lot of the properties of the bag. I mean, plastic is very compelling substance. It comes in, you know, myriad rainbow of colors.
Right.
And it's incredibly useful material. It's a material that has allowed for a kind of more than the Industrial Revolution, but allowed us to provide all different kinds of things to everyone. It's allowed us to, you know, make lighter cars and lighter transportation, airplanes and, you know, computers and smartphones and eyeglasses and all kinds of wonderful gizmos and gadgets and things that we all pretty much at this point take for granted. And if we live in a country where we don't have access to those things and we want those things, and we feel that if we have them, somehow they'll make our life easier and better. And it's been really amazing to see how plastic has, plastic kind of taken over. But anyway, I'm diverting off of the subject. But so in working with the material for my artwork, after about the first 8 years, some of the pieces that I had made, depending on particular bags that I used, began to fissure or break into smaller pieces. And at first I got really excited because I also love nature and I'm an avid gardener and love to grow vegetables and fruit and my own food since I was a little kid with my mom. And I thought that it meant maybe that the plastic was organic, that it was ephemeral like us, that it was like a flower, that it was like a cat or a dog or a pet that we love that, you know, had a finite lifespan and then would break down. And so I started exploring that, only to find out that though some plastics may break into smaller pieces, they actually don't ever go away. And
right.
They don't go back
to the
earth.
They're here with us forever.
They're here with us forever, and it's an interesting kind of transformation because I don't know if that many people listening to the program are aware of this, but most plastic is made from byproducts from processing petroleum. So most plastic is made out of petroleum, and it's made out of oil. And it's, you know, oil and petroleum are made out of animals and plants that lived a long time ago and went extinct, basically. Dinosaurs and plants that were, you know, compressed in the earth. And that's how we made oil. So, I mean, really, when you're using plastic, you're using dinosaurs, and it's a finite resource. And, you know, we use it, particularly when we manufacture, design, and make single-use and disposable items out of it, I think we reuse it in an incredibly irresponsible way. So it's the one place where I and the plastic industry agree. Plastic is a valuable material. We do agree about that. But my feeling is, why would we use it in such an irresponsible way if it's a valuable material? So that's really what we're doing when we make all of these things that are really designed with intended obsolescence, designed to be used for a minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour.
Right, single
and
use.
A short
single
amount
use.
Of time and discarded.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I think to your question about people on my show listening, my listeners know, all my friends know, any public speaking I do, plastic is a petroleum byproduct. It is from the dregs of that as well. It's the bottom of the barrel. And I think the case could be made that the first plastic bag, the particulates of which never biodegrade, could be found wherever that first plastic bag started to, you know, decompose. But it's really awful. And yes, our growing listener audience knows it. But you send a lot of really good stuff, and I try to put the Mrs. Green punch in it for what things I love to highlight. But one particular attachment you gave, I think it would be great to just go through it for new listeners and to refresh old listeners' memories. The facts: refuse single-use and disposable plastics. Start now. Bring your own bag and reusable bottle. To me, those are the two easiest steps that you can take to start living more sustainably. So one of the facts you mentioned, plastic is forever. I mean, including the small amount that has been incinerated has become toxic particulate matter. Then why don't you talk a little about plastic poisons our food chain? People, listen to her.
Yeah, so it's interesting, and I feel like even though I pursued, I originally, the reason I had been studying science is because when I was in junior high school, my mother was diagnosed with breast cancer, and when I was about 17, she died of it, and it had metastasized in her body, and she had a type of breast cancer that started in her lymph nodes, and it was estrogen receptive. So it turns out that these chemicals that we use to manufacture plastic are, you know, estrogenic. They're basically endocrine disruptors. They function like endocrine disruptors in our body. Some of them have even been now identified and renamed by various scientists as obesogens. And these chemicals, what they do is they are chemicals that are plasticizers. So you may be familiar with some of the names, like you've heard, oh, it's got bisphenol A in it, it's got BPA in it, or you may have heard it's BPA-free. Well, if it's BPA-free, they may be using BPD or BPZ or a different bisphenol, which according to Antonia Calafat, who runs the Endocrine Disruption Department, she's a director of that department at the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta. She said that the replacements for bisphenol A, for BPA, are equally bad, if not worse, and that they're changing so quickly in products that it's difficult for them to find the markers to identify which ones are being used. And then there's a whole other group of chemicals called phthalates.
Right.
And these chemicals, the phthalates and the bisphenols, are used as plasticizers. They're added to the carbon chain when you're making plastic in order to make it rigid, malleable, supple. If you want it to be supple or more rubbery, you add more phthalates to it. And many times these are not identified on products. They're just listed as fragrance. Phthalates are listed as fragrance. And this is when your kid is in the bathtub playing with and chewing on like a little rubber ducky, but it's not made of rubber. It's made of petroleum or some other plant-based, you know, carbon-source plastic, but with additives, which are phthalates, and heavy amounts of phthalates to make it rubbery. So these chemicals have been identified as being linked to a number of human health issues. I mean, they can't necessarily per se say that this A causes B, but they can show in studies that this affects this. So it's been, these chemicals have been linked at this point to everything from obesity and diabetes to lower sexual function, sterility, infertility, prostate cancer, brain cancer, and breast cancer. And babies exposed in utero, these chemicals have been linked to shortened anogenital distance, smaller penis size, smaller length, smaller girth, feminization of boys, so young boys getting pudgy breasts, early menses in girls, and lower IQ. Oh, and attention deficit disorder. So don't you just want to eat and drink all your food and your beverages packaged in plastic?
Let's go for it. I mean,
you're pregnant with your first child? I mean,
and
doesn't
what do
that
we
sound
need?
Just wonderful?
Yeah, the education about this. You know, no matter how many times I hear it, it makes me sick and gets me upset. And then the ultimate is it ignites my passion all over again. So you covered in the facts, I mean, plastic poisons our food chain. You very clearly articulated that. And the food we eat sometimes, if it's fish, has been, you know, they have eaten the plastic, and then we eat the fish, and then so we eat the plastic. And then you talked about the effects on human health, that harmful chemicals leached are in the bloodstream, and that the latest research, 279 toxins are found in most newborn babies' umbilical cords. And a lot of them are those plastic toxins. I mean, it's disgraceful. So what about...
That's a study that was conducted by Environmental Working Group. And they're also part of Plastic Pollution Coalition.
We love EWG here. I mean,
Heather White,
we've probably had six different people on, and they're scheduled for coming up. They cover it all. I say, if you want to know about what's safe to put on your skin, what's safe to eat, or what's safe to drink from, just go to EWG, and they pretty much have the answer, and you can trust them. Okay,
yeah,
disposable plastics are the main source of plastic pollution. Can you articulate on that a little bit? One of my pet peeves is the number of straws that are consumed in the United States every day. Just that alone. What do you need a straw for?
Well, it's interesting that you mention that because I am calling you to be on the show from an island in the Ionian Islands. It's the most western island in the Greek islands. And this is our second year working on a pilot project we launched last year, which is called Plastic Free Island. And today we did an audit and a bunch of lessons with school children at an elementary school that has six different grade classes. And one of the things that the kids here really get excited about and understand, because we did a beach cleanup with them this morning, is that people in Greece use a lot of straws, maybe even more than we use in the United States, because they put one or two in every, you know, iced chocolate milk, frappe, coffee that people drink. There's a lot of disposable plastic going on. So, but particularly straws, and kids really like this idea when they see what's happening with straws at the beach and washing up in the water, and they understand there's a big movement here to protect turtles, which are called careta, and the turtles have a bunch of nesting beaches here where they lay their eggs. Like right now, the turtles are mating, and they're going to get ready to lay their eggs on the beaches. And but the children learn all of this from the from this Wildlife Sense group that came and spoke to them, and then they turn around and they instantly are saying no straw, which in Greek is ohi kalamaki. And the kids kind of march around saying ohi kalamaki. But the idea that if you do want a straw, you could consider investing in a reusable stainless steel straw or glass straw.
Glass Dharma.
If you're a business. Glass Dharma. Or if you're a business owner, perhaps offering your clientele paper straws would probably be, you know, a step better than plastic straws. And in my opinion, plastic straws are just literally instant garbage. I mean, they're garbage the minute you take them out of the packet. So, and they can't be that good for you to be drinking out of when I think about it. I mean, I don't know. I have never seen any.
And a lot of times they just serve it to you without asking. And I say, oh, please, I don't want a straw. And if they're going to bring another one. But the number, last time I did research on it, is in the United States, 500 million straws per day are the average use per person. That's real, and you think about it, 500 million average, per, you know, cumulative.
Right.
So it's 1.6 per person is what I mean. But per day is are disposed of. I mean, it's ridiculous.
It's crazy. It's interesting, though. I mean, I know that in Florida, on Miami Beach, that those hotels were having a big problem. You know, because what you have to realize, too, is every coastal community or island archipelago, particularly ones that have hotels or inns or motels or their resorts or places that people go and enjoy because of their natural beauty, that those places have to pay people to clean up every morning in the dark before you get up and walk outside so you can see a picturesque scene. They're paying somebody to pick up all this stuff and clean it out of the sand. And I mean, why serve it in the first place?
Right.
Is my feeling about it. And Miami Beach, I guess, banned plastic straws for the restaurants that are right on the strip now at the hotels. I believe that they did that about a year and a half ago.
It's a small step.
These are just tools that people can use. So
we all have to kind of get on board and out of the consumer coma. Another fact on this sheet, because I decided I'm going to write my newsletter about it next week, because people have to be reminded, you fall back into those patterns. Plastic recycling is not a sustainable solution. People say to me, oh, yeah, but I recycle. What do you say to them in a nice way when they say that to you?
Well, a lot of times I ask them if they actually know what happens to their recycling, because it turns out, I mean, the most recent stats that I read were that in the U.S., we recycle less than 11% of all the plastic bottles that we use annually, and of all the plastic we use, including polystyrene, et cetera, less than 22%. And those are abysmal numbers. I mean, Germany has numbers in the 70 and 80 percentile for taking back the stuff. But I think that the idea that we're actually recycling is a misnomer. I think that what's actually happening with maybe two types of plastic is that it's being downcycled and degraded and turned into something lesser. And I think that's what's actually going on. So it is, you know, we all put things in our recycling bin and just say a little prayer and hope that somebody sorts it and something happens to it. But I'm not sure, you know, what the reality of that is. And I know for a fact that it really depends on the infrastructure of each city or town. And so, for example, I know that I live in Southern California, but I know that San Francisco and Oakland have industrial composting facilities, whereas the city of Berkeley, which is right next to Oakland and right across the bay from San Francisco, does not. So, you know, you don't have to go to a lesser developed country or even area to find a situation where there's no infrastructure to support it. I mean, recycling is a really nice, it's a nice idea. But that's why I prefer this model, which was the first campaign that we developed when we created Plastic Pollution Coalition in the end of 2009, and it's called the Refuse Campaign.
And that's where we're going to have to take a break.
Yeah.
I told you the time would fly.
Sure.
So everybody hold that thought when we come back. The first R is reduce. Let's remember that. More from Deanna Cohen from the Plastic Pollution Coalition. Stay here with me.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at mrsgreensworld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at mrsgreensworld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the Igloo radio app. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. We are a proud member of the Dream Vision 7, Glimmer Glass, Green Radio Divas, Blog Talk, and Speak Up Radio Networks. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@mrsgreensworld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
In the mid-Tucson summer, you would expect it to be over 100 degrees. But deep beneath the University of Arizona's compost heap, temperatures can hit 160. Started by the Compost Cats student group, the U of A Compost Project is collecting tons of waste from around campus and keeping it out of landfills. Gathering garbage and converting it into a useful product for the community? Now that's a hot idea indeed. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And today, we are asking you to think about your use of plastic. The name of our show today is Drowning in Plastic. We are very fortunate to have as our guest Deanna Cohen, CEO and co-founder of Plastic Coalition. And the Plastic Pollution Coalition is a global alliance of individuals, organizations, businesses, and policymakers working toward a world free of plastic pollution. I can only dream of that. And its toxic impacts on humans, animals, and the environment. Deanna was inspired to co-found the group by her work as an artist because her chosen material is the ubiquitous plastic bag. Deanna, thanks so much for being with us and for sharing all these facts and getting us re-inspired about plastic. I am there already, and maybe it'll help some of our listeners incorporate a few more additional habits. Before we go on to what we were talking about, to your first campaign, let's just end the one on the fact sheet about plastic pollution is not only in the ocean, but tell us how devastating plastics are to the marine life and how what kind of toll it's taking, according to NOAA. It's just really not on the plants and making the trees ugly and getting into our bloodstream. It's killing things.
Yeah, I mean, plastic is, look, the ocean is this vast body. We live on an ocean planet. When you look at the Earth from outer space, it's blue. We live on a blue planet. It's made of water. We're made of water. I think that, you know, since the beginning of mankind, we probably thought we could throw things in the water, and it seemed so big that it would never come back and bite us. But basically what's happening is the ocean is, I would say, kind of vomiting plastic out. And if you go to the windward side of almost...
It's a really good word to use.
I mean, it is. If you go to the windward side of almost any island system, you will find a lot of plastic. And some beaches, like Camillo Beach in Hawaii, the windward side of the island on the southern point, are just plastic beaches covered with tons and tons and tons and tons of plastic. And what we're beginning to see is a kind of plastic beach, and it just saddens me to imagine that this is the beach of the future for, you know, my niece and my nephew and the children in my life, that this is what they're going to have to look forward to. And there's nothing kind of more disturbing than to have to swim under kind of a thin film of broken down confetti of plastic in the Mediterranean or, you know, in the Pacific Ocean. And it's quite amazing, actually, because there's so many people that I've met who have been to very remote places, either as scientists or professional surfers or photographers for National Geographic, and they say that they just can't believe how much plastic there is in systems where no one lives.
Where there there's no human inhabitants. Exactly.
No,
they're out in the middle of
really,
the ocean, and they are coming around and being surrounded by plastic bags. They're everywhere.
Yes, and I mean, not just plastic bags, but all kinds of plastic items and things that may have been washing around in one of the naturally occurring gyre systems in the ocean for 10 or 20 or 30 years. So things wash up. I mean, I remember being in London last year and opening the newspaper, and there was a photograph of a yogurt container that someone had found washed up in the beach in Cornwall or somewhere, and it was from the 1970s, and it still had the price on it. And it was a plastic container.
And
there are people who actually collect, like, old plastic washed-up Legos that they don't make anymore because these things just last forever. But, I mean, the more frightening thing about when plastic gets in the ocean, there are a few things that are frightening about it. I mean, one is that when plastic gets in the ocean, it basically functions like a kind of, almost a magnet, like a sponge for other organic pollutants that wash into the sea, and everything washes downhill and into the sea through our rivers, et cetera, our gutters. And so you can end up with a tiny little piece of plastic, like a little tiny ball that's a pre-consumer plastic bit, like a nurdle. You can end up with a tiny little piece of plastic like that, and it can have up to a million times the particulate, persistent organic pollutants attached to the surface of it. And that includes pesticides, pharmaceuticals, flame retardants, all the chemicals that wash down into the sea. And organics stick to this stuff. And then if it's a little round ball and it looks just like a fish egg, something else comes along and says, oh, that's food, and eats it.
Or
and then
worse,
that bioaccumulates.
Eats it and gives it to its babies. I mean, the Chris Jordan website and Midway, his work on plastic pollution was what got my attention over 8 years ago. I just looked at dead baby albatross in the middle of the Pacific Northwest and no people around and saw the impact there. And the numbers are staggering. Your website is awesome, the Plastic Pollution Coalition, but a million seabirds. We're not talking about a little. A million seabirds, and those numbers are growing. 100,000 mammals each year, and those numbers are growing. Dead fish and dead birds because of plastic that we really don't have to use.
Well, for me, those images that Chris Jordan shot, that Wayne Sentman shot, that Susan Middleton, actually it was an image that Susan Middleton took of an albatross that she became friends with on Midway when she was doing other field work there, and then that bird unexpectedly croaked, and they did a necropsy, and the bird had over 330 pieces of plastic in its stomach, and they had named it Shed Bird, and I just heard her speak about this recently, and literally we were all crying. I mean, the thing is, those birds, for me, and those images are very powerful because those birds are a metaphor. These animals that are being affected in such a deep way in that they're dying with their stomachs full but with nothing nutritious in their stomach, they're a metaphor for us. We're human beings, and we're stuffing ourselves full of plastic and the chemicals that leach from plastics into our foods and are affecting our bodies, and we don't even know that we're doing it.
And it's literally killing us. I mean, you're right. I think that's a great point, that it is a metaphor. And I'd like to talk about, I never really quite got, how did you morph from artists using plastic to this passionate position of yours, and how did you step into that? I think we glossed over that. I'm like, this is great. How did she tell us already?
It's a conundrum for me at this point in time. I mean, we just installed a very compelling exhibition at the Goulandry Natural History Museum in Athens, Greece, last week, and it opened on Saturday.
I did not get the invitation. I just want you to know.
Sorry about that. It was on the Facebook page.
Excuse me.
For the Plastic Pollution Coalition Facebook page. We try and post information just in case you're in that neck of the woods and you feel like coming by. But it's going to be up, I think, for 4 or 5 months, so just if you get a chance, swing by the museum. It was an interesting show to do because the bottom floor was different European-based and Greek-based scientific organizations and oceanic organizations that are studying what's happening with plastic in the ocean, plastic in the sea. And then upstairs, we presented a show that, with a little bit of my work and some of Pam Longobardi's work, and then several other artists who are all mainly photography-based artists, and some short videos, et cetera, things like that, but to do a kind of combination. So the show is basically a nexus of art and science, and to allow us to engage people, we hope, in, you know, a deeper and more fun way to want to learn about the issue.
And people, we've had a couple of interviews lately where they talk about how, I don't know what's going on with my throat, excuse me. How art helps to inspire people. It helps kids get engaged. That visual component really helps. So to me, if you go to the Plastic Pollution Coalition website, they're not grossly graphic. They're engagingly graphic, because I think most people really don't want to see a sea turtle eating a yellow plastic bag. They don't want to see a sea lion with one around its neck. I mean, there are so many ways to engage all of the senses, and I think that's what the website does incredibly successfully. So you're the Plastic Pollution Coalition warrior. I might hashtag that. I love it. But there are bigger projects that you're doing to have greater impact, and I'd like to talk about three of them, if we can, the plastic-free schools, and especially that one, because I, in my work as Mrs. Green, feel that schools are becoming engaged in so many ways on a bigger level, and you can affect more lives that way. And yours is a step-by-step. If you want to have a plastic-free school, here's how you go about it. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, sure. And I would say if anyone is interested in this issue, well, two things. First, one, please visit our website and just see some of the information that we provide
there
and link different coalition members. Yeah. And that's plasticpollutioncoalition.org. But along those lines, a group that's part of our coalition called the Product Stewardship Institute has just released, in conjunction with the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, a toolkit about how to reduce your plastic, how to do an audit to determine the plastic footprint of your college or university, and then how to reduce that. And this is something that we've been trying to convey not only to universities and college campuses, but also to elementary schools, middle schools, high schools, that you can actually take a day and count what everybody's got going on in their lunch and what's being served at the cafeteria or eateries on campus, and then multiply that by how many days you have in a school year, and, you know, actually itemize it and come up with a picture that allows you to see how much, you know, plastic pollution you're generating at your school. And then just get together with the people who do the food procurement and the administration and some of the teaching staff and any clubs on campus. And then, of course, the people who are also contending with waste management on campus, and have a real conversation with them and look for low-hanging fruit. Look for ways you can reduce things. And when you do things like that, you end up, like 2 years ago, the students at Harvard banned plastic bottle water on campus. 3 years ago, or four years ago now, University of California, Santa Barbara students decided to get rid of all the plastic bags at the student store. So there are things that you can do, but you need to give yourself the picture first so that you can understand what you're dealing with. But at the same time, I mean, another small campaign that we have is just the hashtag use real stuff, make real stuff.
Love it.
And
love
the idea
it.
Is that whenever possible, you know, and that's part of the whole refuse campaign as well. When you refuse something, I think that's a fun thing to do when you're a little kid. You can say, no, I don't like that. I don't want to have that. No straw with my lemonade, please. No straw in my iced tea. But what you can also do is you can say, oh, I'd really like to have a coffee. Here I am at Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf or Starbucks or some coffee intelligentsia. I'd really like to have a coffee, but I'm going to have it here. Would it be possible to have it in a real ceramic cup? Or do you have a glass mug that I could have it in? Oh, you don't? Maybe I'll splurge this time and I'll invest and I'll buy a reusable one. And I'll just use that every time I come. And what you find now is a lot of businesses are catching on and they're giving a kind of positive, monetized incentive to people who bring their own cup. And so you can save, you know, 10 cents or 25 cents on a coffee by bringing your own reusable ceramic or stainless steel or glass mug with you. And a lot of young people that I meet all the time now are into it. They carry jam jars, they carry their own straw, they carry bamboo utensils. They carry a fold-up little bag or a canvas bag with them. And these are very, very simple things. The whole trick to it is really a behavior change. So we're going for a major behavior change. And that takes time because you're relearning something. So I think it's tougher for adults to learn than it is for children who are used to being corrected and learning new things, you know, 10,000 times a day.
Right. We can start with both places. You're right. And I tell my friends, if you do this, and I actually had a woman tell me this Saturday night at an event we had with an elementary school. The entire science club was about reducing plastic. But she said to me, you know, Gina, I read your book and I did what you said. I forgot my plastic, my reusable bags in the car. I got to Target, had a cart full of stuff. And I said, uh-oh, I forgot my plastic, my reusable bags. And she said, so I left my cart there, went out to the car, and got the bags. That's how you break the habit. Because after about three times doing that, you're not going to forget your bags. You're going to take them with you and say,
That's right.
So it is a new habit and one that you can learn quite quickly, I think, if you're committed. So,
well, also, there's a little way that I cheat on it, too, which is Chico Bags, which is this, you know, little company
right.
that started out
right.
in Northern California with Andy Keller. What I do is I buy them, like, I think they're called mini Chico Bags or micro Chicos or something. They're really, really small, and you forget that you have them, and you can tuck them in the corner of your purse.
They fit
inside
everywhere.
And I just have to always remember to, like, it's kind of like folding up a sleeping bag when you, like, push it back into the little bag. And I just always remember to keep it in my purse, even if I'm carrying a really small bag, and I've always got it, and it folds out pretty good size, and I used it today when we went to the market.
It's a
really
perfect
fantastic.
Example. I had these little Mrs. Green bags that I would love to have sent you one. I gave out thousands in the past 8 years, and the company stopped making them, and they were exactly that, tiny little poofs that weighed nothing that you could stick in anywhere, and I just was on the website 2 days ago to look for Chico bags. Mine were really adorable and kind of different looking. But we have to go back to giving out something because if you hand somebody something, they kind of get the message that you're really serious about it. So plastic.
Yeah, and it's a sweet, really useful tool.
It is. It really is. People appreciate it. So on the website, it does talk about what is a plastic-free school. It does tell you how to go through the steps and university campuses that are committed. What about plastic-free towns? I know you're going to stop at nothing. Talk about another major undertaking, plastic-free towns.
Right. So the idea behind, the idea behind all of these is these are pilot projects. These are
Let's get it started.
You said it's a fantasy for you. I don't want it to be a fantasy. I want it to be something for us to aim towards. So these are an ideal scenario. And we are going to begin the process, the long process of two steps, you know, one step forward, two steps back towards these things. So how do we go about creating, in the city or town that we live in, a reducing the amount of disposable plastic there? And one of the ways you can do that is you can work towards becoming a plastic-free town. And a good way to start is to explore the options when it comes to passing a bag ban. To ban plastic bags for your town. So what we did is we kind of just took best practices from a bunch of different coalition members and created a very basic template of how to get started from groups that are willing to share information about how they were able to do it.
And get the movement started. And to me, all of these things that you have are such practical, doable solutions. And, you know, two very different stories, if you don't mind, that I share with you. One is how Hawaii was the first state to ban plastic bags, the first state. And I did a trip to Maui a couple of years ago and interviewed people from their sustainability, their municipalities. And the way that they got people on board from Hawaii to vote to support this plastic bag ban was strictly through photographs. When you were describing the beaches that looked like they were plastic bag beaches, they used photographs for the campaign and said, is this what you want Maui to look like? And it really worked. So it was, you know, a very important visual. And in Arizona, we're so forward-thinking here. I'm being so sarcastic. In about a three-day time period, the state legislature, in their infinite wisdom, forbid municipalities to ban the use of plastic bags. Flagstaff.
That was sneaky, though.
That,
by the way,
that was really sneaky, and it happened literally. It was introduced one day, and the vote came on the next. So we have a ways to go here. That's why people have to take the power back and make sure it happens. Now, we have 30 seconds. We're going to be on break. Lots more to share. Very fortunate to have as our guest Deanna Cohen, CEO and co-founder of Plastic Pollution Coalition. More when we come back. Please stay here with me.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Do you dare to share? In 2009, the University of Arizona started its car sharing program. Today, students, faculty, and staff have access to a shared fleet of cars that includes 7 hybrids and even the zero emissions Nissan Leaf. Not only does car sharing give the campus community wheels, but it takes all those extra cars off the road, too. Now that greens things up, doesn't it? The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And I am so hoping that this show today will enable you, inspire you, get you to think about plastic consumption and our single-use plastic and the impact it's having on our health, on our bodies, on our planet. And we are so blessed to have the Plastic Pollution Coalition warrior. I love that. It's such a good, strong word. Deanna Cohen. She's the CEO and founder of the Plastic Pollution Coalition. And they're doing great work globally. So, Deanna, I would like to go a little bit to the global citizen perspective, which you are. And I want you to give us your honest assessment about what countries do you see that are leading the movement, what's inspiring them to do it, and who's really stepping up to end plastic pollution? Are there some countries that you can point to that are stellar examples of making a difference?
Well, I would say in terms of very high level of understanding, the need to do everything from recycle to compost to reuse would be Germany.
They get it on alternative energy, too. They're doing it all.
Yeah, just remarkably.
Really,
yeah, amazing. But, you know, it's a small country, and they have finite resources, and they are willing to look ahead into the future and imagine what they'd like their future to look like, and to still have resources and clean air and clean water and a clean environment to live in. So I'd really say that they're the trendsetters. That said, India, which is an enormous continent, I don't know what the current tally is, but they have more plastic bag bans in more cities in India than anywhere else in the world, but it's just such a big continent.
And so many people, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of people. And, I mean, interestingly, you know, India's lucky. India and China are lucky. They still have very vibrant stainless steel industry. And, you know, in India they make all those kind of thali and different plates and cups and things out of steel. And, you know, sadly in the United States we've kind of just exported our steel industry for a lot of stuff overseas, which is probably was not that smart. But, I mean, that's what I'm seeing around me. But we have people contact us on a daily basis from all over the world. I mean, there are people doing really interesting things in Australia, in New Zealand. There are interesting young people all over the United States. And there's even a young man I met in India whose name is Saurabh Kaishal, and he gave basically the equivalent of a TED Talk, but it's a conference which is called INK, I-N-K.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like the Indian version of TED, but and affiliated with TED. He gave a talk when he was 19 about basically about space pollution. And we had, you know, great conversations about that. And he said there's just a ton of garbage floating in outer space. And it's becoming, you know, it's a problem. It's like collateral, you know, damage for if it hits satellites or a space station or anything that we've got out there. And he's trying to invent ways to clean it up. So he's looking at it in outer space. We're looking at it on Earth. I'd have to say, overall, I think it's really important for people to consider how they can be a part of the solution, how they can use alternative products, and how they can contribute to source reduction. And when I say source reduction, I'm not talking about waste management.
Right.
I'm talking about how
real
do we create a situation.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's, you know, back to, again, this idea of the four R's, reduce, reuse, recycle. We put a new R onto the front, which is the idea of refuse. So we ask people whenever possible to refuse single-use and disposable plastics, either by when you order something, say, hi, I'd like a margarita, no straw. I'd like an iced tea, no straw. Please don't put any plastic in my drink. To, hi, I'm purchasing this, no bag, I've got my own bag. So you just begin to let people know, and by carrying your own reusable water bottle, be it glass, stainless steel, ceramic, whatever it's made out of, you know, a gourd, you're going to have an object, a container, which you can refill and refill and refill, and if you don't break it, thousands of times, and won't be as interactive with the liquid, with the water or the juice or whatever you're containing inside of it, so you don't have to worry that it may be leaching micro amounts of an endocrine disruptor into the water that you're drinking or into the beverage that you're drinking. So there's really simple things that people can do, and I think that although this is overwhelming and you walk into any market and you just feel like, oh my God, how are we ever going to get our heads around this? At the same time, I think that we need to start on a personal level with regards to ourselves and our families, our children, and our parents, and look at ways that we can help reduce the amount of plastic, disposable plastic in our lives. And I've been doing really fun things like going to secondhand stores like Goodwill and Salvation Army and buying these old Pyrex refrigerator glass containers that they're kind
they
of a milk
awesome.
Glass.
And then, yeah. They are so awesome. We have sets of those.
They're colored on the exterior,
and
they have a clear glass top. And so I've been purchasing things like that and using those instead of, you know, all of the Tupperware and things that I loved so much.
And that's another R.
Prior,
I mean, to me,
this.
It's repurpose because I love that.
Yeah.
I can just see my whole newsletter being written about it. One of the things that my very first guest when I left a Clear Channel affiliate and decided to become an independent network was Darren Beal. And he and a couple of other people started FreeCycle, which is an amazing organization. And one of the things he told me, which is I think, rather sad, for the most part, and that was 4 years ago that he was one of my first guests, he said that no location, like no town or no city or no county, had ever voluntarily banned the use of plastic, that it always took policy or charging or some type of law to be passed in order for plastic consumption use to go down. Do you know of any communities where they willingly took it on? I mean, campus is one thing, but where a town really said, we're going to say no to plastic without actually passing a ban?
I'm so sorry. I actually just missed the end of your question. Could you repeat that again?
It's okay. I just wondered if you knew of any towns or locations other than universities that willingly said, we're going to ban the use of plastic. We're not going to sell plastic bottles. We're not going to give away plastic bags. Because this guy, Darren Beal, who started FreeCycle, said it usually takes public policy changes to have a widespread application of plastic ban reduction?
Yeah, well, I mean, I know that obviously I follow California a little more closely than other places because I'm based there.
And they're doing it.
But I know that it took us, we kind of got to a point where we had banned plastic bags in about 97 cities and counties. And I think it's over 100 now. And at that point, we were able to finally, I think it was the third or fourth time, pass a statewide ban. But as soon as that was passed and then Governor Brown signed it into law, the plastic industry decided to pay a bunch of canvassers, and they collected 80,000 signatures at $3 a piece, and now have gotten something that's going to, basically they blocked the implementation of our plastic bag ban for the state for 14 months, which means that it will be voted on again to overturn the bag ban.
It's a referendum, I guess, in
November of 2016. So, I mean, and this is just like kid stuff for them.
It's big money, and they have it, and it's a waste. I mean, it's a waste. If they put that money towards education of why the use of plastic is hurting us in so many ways, it would be money much better spent. What about your big dream and your hope that you would like to see for the for your coalition and for this kind of going viral? Do you have a good sense, a good feel for that? Because you're in the midst of it, and it's a big deal. I mean, it's one of my favorite things to talk about.
Yeah, no, I mean, we have an incredibly vibrant community of people. We've grown now to over 400 businesses and organizations around the world. We have over 60 notable coalition members, and that includes well-known, you know, amazing professional chefs and professional athletes and singers and songwriters and actors and actresses and professional snowboarders and surfers and a lot of people who really are right up there and seeing it. I would say surfers were the first people who joined the coalition because, you know, they're
seeing it.
Yep. They're working in it.
They're working.
Yeah, they're in it all the time. So they really saw what was going on in the ocean and are deeply concerned about it. But, I mean, our hopes and dreams, my hopes and dreams and my invitation to everyone who's listening to your program would be I welcome everyone is invited to join the coalition. It's very simple. You just fill out a few things on a little form and join us. I invite you to have your organizations join us, your businesses join us, and then take a look, you know, personally at your own life with your family, what's going on, maybe the school that you're at or your kids are at, and your place of business, and see if there are ways that you could reduce your plastic footprint, either in production or distribution, at point of sale, if you're a retail business. I really think that it will take all of us looking at this and waking up and having an awareness about it. But I invite everyone to join us. I'd like everyone in the world to join us. And at some point, I'd really just like this to become part of the greater, you know, zero waste movement, international zero waste movement, because we really have a lot of things that we need to look at. And this is, you know, just one component.
And I think people are waking up. I want to ask you kind of a tough question, because it's tough for me to even answer. When I go to big music events, for example, we are out in the desert. And when we're talking about a couple of thousand people, sometimes even 10, 15,000 people in big arenas, what is the solution for the plastic bottle? I mean, people ask me that all the time. We have events here that, you know, Big Brothers and Big Sisters put on, and there's plastic forks, plastic knives, plastic spoons, plastic cups. So what do you, I mean, for those things, sometimes I say they wanted to hire me as a consultant for one of the big events here. And unfortunately, even though we do a lot of recycling here, if it's compromised with food, it cannot be put in the process. So we have a lot of issues with that. If a box of pizza is on the pizza box and there's a lot of cheese, you know, it's contaminated. So what are some of your thoughts for big events? Can we lick that one? Can we take that one on?
I think we can. So one of the projects we've been working on, I think you'd find it on our website under Plastic Free Events, is we've been working with Bonnaroo, which is the largest music festival in the United States, this will be our third year working with them, but our second year since we launched a campaign. We launched a pilot project last year, which is called Refill Revolution, and that's the hashtag for it, Refill Revolution. And we're getting prepped right now to work with them again. Bonnaroo, I think, is June 11th to the 14th this year. It's about an hour and a half or 2 hours outside of Nashville, Tennessee. Okay. And it's 80,000 people, and they're camping. I believe it's a three-day or four-day music festival. And what we did with them last year is Bonnaroo purchased and branded a small amount, but just 7,500 reusable stainless steel cups that had a little neoprene strap and a carabiner on them. And they made them available at point of sale for every beer. And they sold them out, because they didn't have that many, in a day and a half. And then people got excited and were trying to steal them from each other because they wanted them. Because basically, once you had purchased one of these, you could hook it on your belt, you could hook it on your shorts, on your purse, on your backpack. And every beer that you bought after that was a dollar off.
Oh, my gosh. That is
so inspiration. It was so successful last year that they decided to scale it up. So this year, I believe we're doubling it. And, I mean, it seems like small beans, but it's a pretty big deal. I would say I think that music festivals and big events should really consider maybe even finding a way to build it into their price point, including a reusable cup, and encouraging or demanding or insisting that their vendors bring in their beverages in larger containers and, you know, letting people refill things.
And it really can make a huge difference. When you're talking about numbers like that, that's a really, really big difference. And I think when I talk about entertaining to people, it's not this heavy duty, oh my gosh, I can't use plastic. Ever since I started being conscious about the waste at parties and entertaining, you can go to those Goodwills. You can go to the Habitat for Humanity, the restores, and find fun dishes. You can build up your collection of reusable napkins. You can ask people to bring their silverware. I mean, there's really opportunities that make it fun and prettier. And how hard is it to serve pitchers of water with ice and slices of lemon in them? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's something else I've been collecting just on my own from secondhand stores and vintage stores, is old pitchers, beautiful glass pitchers. And I use them for things. And really, I mean, why do people save nice sets of dishes and cutlery if it's not to use them when you have a gathering? Why instead would you go to Smart and Final or, you know, some junky market and buy a bunch of plastic junk to serve people food on? There's nothing elegant about it. It's not beautiful. It doesn't make the food taste good. And you're just creating instant garbage.
Bags and bags. And it makes, I say to people, and I did write about this in my book, do you ever really want to eat off a styrofoam or a paper plate? Because if you're having, you know, an ear of corn and baked beans and whatever thing, the fork breaks and there's just no upside. Nobody really wants to eat off of those. And over time, I believe you can collect, you know, make your collection, and it really makes a statement, and it's prettier and it's nicer.
Agree.
Okay, so tell me the ways. We have 2 minutes left. I want to go over the Plastic Pollution Coalition website. That's huge. A couple of the hashtags, hashtag Refill Revolution. I love that. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good one. And how can people support your work? If they feel called after this, what's the best way they can do, other than being the change that we all wish to see in the world? How can they become engaged?
Yeah, I would say please visit our website, which is plasticpollutioncoalition.org. Feel free to join our coalition. You can sign up. You can take a pledge to, you know, for the four R's, to refuse, reduce, reuse, and recycle. Well, actually, hopefully there's nothing left to recycle if you refuse and reduce and reuse. We welcome people to get more engaged if they want to go and look at the templates and information that we're sharing from different coalition members, and see if there's anything that they can feel inspired by or take and implement where they live or where they go to school or where they work. And we are hashtag on Twitter. If you ever see images of either a solution or a horrible plastic pollution situation that you feel absolutely you must document with your
Twitter,
you know, smartphone, with your Twitter, our Twitter handle is @plasticpollutes, and it will come up with our little logo, our bottle man logo.
Great.
It's a a man with a bottle or a human being with a bottle inside of him with an inside an upside-down bottle, like an exclamation point.
And we'll be putting it out on all of our social media. We have to end this amazing show. May 19th, Down to Earth, Andrew Quigley, Director of Environmental Services, and our May 13th show, Kathleen Rogers, President of Earth Day Network. Deanna Cohen, good luck. Thanks for being on our show, and keep
Thanks,
up
you
the
too.
Great work.
Thank you very much. Take care, everybody.